All right, so how do we structure these offerings? So we've talked about the securities laws. We're kind of through with that. I know that's a little dry and can be, I usually see people sleeping in the front row when I'm teaching this in front of a group. So, wake up, because now we're going to talk about the really important stuff, and that's how you're going to structure this offering with your investors. Generally, you're going to have a create what we call a capital stack, right? So you're going to put together some different types of funding in order to take down the deal. So you're going to always try to get a bank loan first, because that is going to be the cheapest source of money for you. I often have potential clients call me and say, well, I'm going to buy the entire project with investor money. And that's always a bad idea, because you're going to be hard-pressed to find a deal that's good enough to pay what we call an unleveraged return that your investors are going to be excited about investing in. Because if you go buy something and you pay all cash for it, you're not taking advantage of the fact that you might be able to get a significant portion of that purchase price from a bank at a much lower interest rate. And if you do that, then the remaining amount, the gap funding that you're going to raise from your private investors, can now earn a higher return because you paid the bank so much less for the bulk of the money that you put into the deal. So you use the gap funding. So that's the difference between the purchase price and all the other things you need to acquire that property. So your acquisition fee to yourself, down payment, your closing costs, your operating reserves, any rehab costs. Those are going to add up and add on to the purchase price, so that when you go to close on the property, you really need, maybe the property is selling for $1 million, but you're going to raise 1.2, and then you're going to get some of that from the bank, and you're going to get the rest of it from investors, and maybe you're going to also invest some of that yourself. So this acquisition fee is something to just keep in mind. We'll talk more about that. What types of investors do you have? We talked about the private lenders and the difference between a private lender and a hard money lender. If you're using private lenders, it's very hard to use private lenders for gap funding. And the reason for that is because many of the institutional lenders that are going to fund the bulk of that purchase price are going to have a prohibition against subordinate debt in their loan documents. So they're going to tell you that you're not allowed to have any other lenders in a junior position to them on those deals. And so if you're going to raise gap funding, then you need to not look at private lenders in that case, and you'd be looking at equity investors. And so equity investors, typically, you could have an equity investment class where you just pay them a fixed return. So we call that a debt class. So that would be a class, say you're going to form an LLC that's going to take title to the property, and we would create a class in there for investors who are just going to get a fixed return. And then we could have another class in there that's just going to split profits, or they're going to get a preferred return plus a profit split. Most of the time, we don't have a debt class in our LLCs. We usually just have the equity investors, and they're going to split profits. Who are they splitting profits with? With your management team. With the management team. Or they're going to have a preferred return plus a profit split. We write the bulk of our offerings with a preferred return plus a profit split. So if you were doing a transaction with a private lender, so this might work on some very small properties, but it's not going to work on your bigger properties. Then you would have a promissory note. You would offer interest, and you would probably offer some kind of periodic payments. There would be remedies for default in the event you didn't make the payments on time or pay off the loan balance when you agreed. Then there would be some default remedies for the lender. You might have to do a personal guarantee. And it's an adversarial relationship, you against the lender. Pay or else. You're also not sharing with that lender if something changes in your life, unless it's going to affect your ability to pay the loan. So you're not going to call up your lender and say, hey, I just lost my job. You're just not going to do that. You're just going to struggle through, pay the loan, and then if you get to a point where you can't, then you've got to do something else. So, those may be prohibited if you're getting some kind of institutional financing. So it is an important tool to understand, but it may have limited use in your multifamily investing business. Equity investors are where you're going to do the bulk of your business. They're going to share distributable cash. That's the distinction between interest and sharing distributable cash. Distributable cash is the cash that's left over after you have paid all the expenses of operating the property and you've paid your debt service to any senior lender, and whatever's left is potentially distributable cash. But the management team is going to look at that and they're going to say, well, we should keep some money in reserves, and maybe the bank, the institutional lender, is going to require that you keep some money in reserves. So you've got to cover that first. And then you can look at what else do we need to do to the property? Are there some planned improvements? Do we need to hold back some cash in order to do those? Or can we go ahead and distribute that cash out to our investors? So once you've made a determination that that cash is distributable, it becomes distributable cash. That's always up to the sole discretion of the manager. And the manager can withhold that. Whereas if you had a promissory note and you were paying interest, you don't have the ability to do that. All right. The other thing about distributable cash is you only pay it if there is any. So you don't pay it like a loan where you would dig into your personal savings in order to make that loan payment on your commercial property if you didn't have it from operations. Here, you only distribute cash when there is some. All right. Manager determines there's no default remedy. If you hold back that distributable cash, then the investor, the equity investor, can't come after you and take over the property because they just don't have a default remedy. Now, if you've stolen the money, that's a different situation. Then they're going to complain to the regulators and they'll come after you. But, you know, that's not going to be the case. And, you know, they can't come after you just because the property doesn't perform as you projected. All right. And there are no required payments, because what this preferred return means, you could say something like, we're going to give our equity investors an 8% preferred return and 40 or 60% of the profits. So that means that you're going to give them all of the distributable cash first until they get that preferred return before the management team takes any money, before they earn anything. So the all of it goes to the investors who have the preferred return until they achieve that preferred return. And then you can go to a split. And then the lenders don't prohibit that. It's because of all these terms that they know that the management is going to stay in control regardless of if there's enough money to pay, and they don't determine anything for their investors until after the lender has been satisfied.